The GAA Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
All right, you're very welcome back. It is Thursday evening's Off the Ball. If you missed John Giles, that will be up on offtheball.com very shortly, and that is a place to go as well for all the rolling news as it happens over the coming days and weeks. You can check us out on OTB Sports Radio. Just download the Go Loud app and check out youtube.com/offtheball because everything's up there as well. Lots of brilliant pieces from the past. All our road shows up there. So any of the good stuff that you miss out on and you want to use to pass a couple of hours in these testing times, do check it out. Now, delighted to be joined on the line by Tommy Welsh. Tommy, good evening.
Hey, Nathan. How are you doing?
Not too bad. How's all in Tullerone?
Yeah, sure. Strange times. I suppose strange times. So everyone's trying to adapt and get used to a new way living for a couple of months, I suppose.
Are you working from home?
Yeah, working from home. So I work for Bank of Ireland Finance. So I call around to all the motor dealers in the southeast. So, you know, we have to work from home at the moment. And it's a busy time for us, to be honest, because, as you know, it'll be an important part of the next few months going forward. So, it's as flat to the mat now, really.
There was, because of the weekend that was in it with St. Patrick's Day, I guess there was something of a novelty factor for the kids being at home for a while and not really being allowed out. But the last 2 days when they were due back at school, Tommy, I won't lie, it's been a bit tough.
Absolutely. I think they're mad to get away from us as well.
Oh, my God.
But we went up. We actually had a good Paddy's Day, in fairness. Usually you're training or you have a match or you have the Paddy's Day club finals you might tee into, but we went up to, I forget the exact name, I think our Waterford friends might know the exact name, but the Cumshie Con, I think, mountains. They're up near the Mahon Falls, and you kind of, it's about an hour up to this beautiful lake. And now we had the kids with us, so we kind of stopped there. We brought the hot chocolate and a few scones, and we kind of pigged out there for a half an hour of that. But it was a fabulous, fabulous walk. And I suppose, you have to try and look at other ways of living. And, it was nice, a different way of spending Paddy's Day, I suppose.
Yeah, it's going to be one of the interesting parts of this as time goes on, as to what we learn from all of this and appreciating spending this time with our children and having to spend that time with our children a little bit differently than we would have previously, when they're probably get out and play outside, whereas now we need to figure things out for ourselves for once.
Yeah, and like I'll always go back to a great, it was one of the best interviews I ever heard, was between Off the Ball and Gerard Loughnane. It was a good number of years ago now. I've listened to it a few times, but Loughnane is kind of the, he knows most things about nearly everything, really. And I remember that time, I think it possibly could have been Joe was interviewing him, and he was talking about that time he had cancer, and he was up, probably changed his whole life. But he just said he immersed himself in the hospital life. He didn't think about why did he get such an illness at such a time. He said, no, this is after happening to me, and I'll just, whatever they ask me to do in the hospital, whatever the nurses ask me to do, I will take it. And off he went. And I thought it was a great outlook. And, I've tried to, I suppose, think along them lines, no matter what happens in your life. And I suppose this is one of them times for most people in Ireland. And you could probably get down on yourself and start thinking, what if this didn't happen? I could have a nice life, or, maybe possibly after losing my job, and I could still have a job and looking forward to holidays. But I think Gerard Loughnane's way of looking at life, I thought was absolutely brilliant. And, everyone will just, I suppose, try and think along them lines. It might be positive, it might be beneficial to people.
Yeah, look, everybody's situation is different as well. As you say, the economic side of this is going to be very tough on an awful lot of people.
Yeah.
But people talk of this being a bit of a war. I suppose for a lot of people, we need to remember we're not in the trenches here. We've been asked to stay at home with our children.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose it's the unknown, really, isn't it, Nathan? That's the thing, really. But hopefully, Ireland seemed to be after putting in, good measures and very early. So you'd be hoping that it might stop the impact, and, maybe we might recover quicker than is expected.
What are the Tullerone under-8s going to be doing then for the next few months? Because Brian O'Driscoll was on Friday, and I think he touched on this brilliantly about the role that sports plays in our lives, from sitting down of an evening to watch a brilliant Champions League game to, I think, for anybody who plays sport or who have children who play sport, from, I know my life would be Friday night soccer training, Saturday morning GA training, Sunday morning soccer match, and the lads absolutely live for that. Like, that little part of your life is gone now. And I know you love that part as well, and to try and keep them ticking over. Is there a Tommy Walsh master plan?
Yeah, well, I think for that reason, I think my young lads want me to go back to life back to normal, so I don't drag them outside all the time. But yeah, well, I'd always loved them being outside. So the minute work finishes for me there around 5:45 at the moment, I tip out and we're outside for the evening. Like this evening, now we're playing basketball. You know, it kind of brings you back to your younger days too. Like when my auntie and my cousin used to play for the Waterford the Snow Cream Wildcats, they were called, back in the 90s when basketball was massive in Ireland at the time. I suppose Donny, he'd probably know about it. My favourite team in the men's side was the Star of the Sea. So
you've got to be a Ballina man, a Ballina man.
The Stephanie.
Dean McHale, Dior Marsh.
No, I was Javin Dupree and Adrian Fulton. So it's amazing the different thoughts and memories that come back into your head. So we were out there shooting a few hoops there for a while, and I was thinking back actually. So Finn got a new basketball hoop for Christmas. Well, it was either his Christmas or his birthday, the two of them at the one time. And but when I was back his age, well, a little bit older, trying to make basketball hoops, I had a square basketball hoop made out of timber put up in the garage. And you just go out there, Mo Stevens, messing around. But yeah, I know, you just have to. What are we doing? We're getting outside Mo Stevens. Marlies is family or farmer. So we try and go over there a couple of evenings a week as well.
There's a bit of work to be done, no doubt. Keep you busy. You see, it's different for you when you go out playing with your kids. So I go out playing soccer with my kids, and I feel like I'm Lionel Messi beside him, and I'm doing all the tricks and all of this. Whereas you actually are Lionel Messi when it comes to showing them how to do a bit of hurling. Are you soft on them when it comes to hurling? Like, are you able to step back and go, lads, just go and enjoy it? Or is a little bit of you thinking, you know what?
Yeah.
There's a family name to keep up here.
I don't think like that, but you are trying to think of, you have to push them as well as be, you know, as well as stand off. So it's trying to get that balance, really, is probably a difficult thing as a parent. And, you know, you're trying to think every day of what's the right thing to do. But, you know, some days you push, other times you kind of pull back. But, they're only young lads. So at the time being, now, it's a little bit more sitting back than pushing, I suppose.
Yeah. So we were chatting last night and we were sort of figuring out what we might talk about. And obviously, listen, you played in so many memorable games, from Leinster finals to All-Ireland finals. And I was asking for your sort of best All-Ireland final memory. And in typical Tommy style, it wasn't one you actually, senior final that you played in. You wanted to go way back in time to one you remember as a kid.
Yeah. You know, just, I suppose, you were talking about memories and that. And I suppose the first time I ever played in Croke Park was the 95 All-Ireland, when Clare won it for the first time in, was it, 63 years. So I was playing the mini sevens. That time, like, to put it into perspective, like in Tullerone Primary School at the moment, there's two boys in sixth class. In our class in sixth class, we had 16 boys.
Wow.
So we were strong at hurling as well. So if you win the mini sevens, you get to go on that time and play in a regional mini sevens. And it was played at Blow and Wexford. So we won the Kilkenny one. We were playing Blow and Wexford, 10 of us, a panel of 10. And the kind of teachers go around that look after the primary school, to come in a bun school. They go around and they pick two or three players from every team to go on and play in either an All-Ireland semi-final or an All-Ireland final. So three of us were lucky enough then to get picked. And
how big a deal was that for you when you were, what were you at that stage, probably?
So 12.
12?
Yeah, it's unbelievable, really. You know, I think either the school got a letter or you got a letter to say that you've been chosen. And then the big thing was, you either got an All-Ireland semi-final or an All-Ireland final. So first of all, you get lucky to be chosen. Then you get lucky to be chosen on an All-Ireland final. And then for Clare at the time, like, they were coming with all the knives, they were coming with all the banners, the colour, you know, they were everybody's team except for whoever they were playing, because they hadn't won it. Like, throw back to a couple of years before that, after being hammered in two Munster finals. So everyone was shouting for him, so I got chosen that to play in that. And so he went up that morning up to Dublin. And I remember we got chips and sausages. That was our pre-match meal in some school up in Dublin. And delighted with life. And Jack Bootman was the president. Lovely man. And kind of, you know, he was the people's champion, really. And I remember Jack came down talking, and, you know, you're delighted that he was talking to you. And then he started eating all my chips. So I wasn't too happy with him then.
Did you give him a little whack and say, here, hands off?
I said, I better let him off, he's the president. But he was lovely. That was him, like, you know, he was like one of your own, really. Fair play to him. And so then we went off to Croke Park, and I can't really remember. Was it? I think it was half time, possibly in the minor final that you get to play. So it was the crowd. Like, I was playing for Clare, so every time you hit the ball, the crowd, the Clare crowd, went bananas. I was full back. Rory Jacob from Wexford, Desi Mighton from Wexford, two great Owl Art of Ballet players. They were playing with us as well, and it was just phenomenal. It was absolutely incredible. And
were you nervous?
No, because you know you don't care about winning or losing. I think you only get nervous when you're thinking about winning or losing. That was just want to get out and hit as many balls as you could, and as many people as it.
Is there a referee? Are there fouls in the come on the Munster games? Was that where you learned that there should be no referee and just let it flow?
You kind of let it flow the way it should be.
Yeah, proper hurling.
Yeah, proper hurling. So you kind of refereed yourself. So no, it was great, and the day itself was great. You know, afterwards, then you get to play, and your parents get to come up as well, and they watch the match as well. So, and the final was great. Then sure, Clare went on to win it, and there were so many memorable things and memorable players about that day. You go look at the team, Lohan, you had Anthony Daly, Davy Fitz, Ollie Baker, Fergie Toohey, Fingers O'Connell, you know, they're all there, all these legends, Jamesy, you know, the Darlin from Clare. So it's just unbelievable to be part of it, really, yeah.
We're going to be joined by Brian Lohan in a couple of moments' time to maybe chat a bit more about the game. From your point of view, Brian Lohan, what was it about him that you worshipped, that he was the idol for you coming out from that day, that you wanted, I don't know if you wanted to model your game on him or what it was that you saw in him above all those, because it was such a legendary Clare team. You could have picked half a dozen of them as standout stars. What was it about what Lohan did?
Yeah, well, Lohan was the inspiration, really, wasn't he? I was only looking back at a clip there, you know, about half an hour ago of that final. And when they clear a ball, like, you don't see it as much anymore because there's so much sharp passing and movement and hand passing. But back then, if you got the ball a full back or corner back, you drove it the length of the field. You tried to bury it out back to Clare or back to Kilkenny or back to Cork. And when you did it, the crowd were on their feet. It was like a goal or it was like a point. But when Lohan did it, it was like, even if there was 3,000 at the game, it was like there was 80,000 Clare people at the game. That was the effect that he had on it. And like, there was one funny story, but one of the funniest times we had in our back garden was, I had that Clare jersey obviously going forward and a red helmet. And when we were out in the garden, then we just, you know, you'd start, one of them lad might start shouting, "Go on, Lohan." And then the whole 3 or 4 you'd be shouting, "Go on, Lohan." You kind of drive yourself, you'd be psyched, like, you know. And so there was one day the three of us, I won't tell you which brother anyway, came out
with
it.
Go on, do. But
he came out with the jersey anyway, the Clare jersey, and he came out with the red helmet. And it wasn't the one I wore, it was kind of a battered and a broken one. And next minute he starts shouting, "Go on, Lohan, go on, Lohan." Then we were all doing it. The first puck out went anyway, the same lad, he got a belt in his fingers. He had to go back into the house crying. So we were shouting out, "You're no Lohan, don't ever come out with that red helmet again." So, yeah, I know, listen. And people remember as well, when the ball went in low, you come out and you control it with your hurl. Lohan never done it. He came out and he caught it. It's an impossible thing to do, really. Like, come out full pace, hand down on the ground, and stay going and drive it down to the field. So, it was inspiration. And there was a lot more. There wasn't just Brian, like the whole Clare team. Like, remember looking at half time, and one of the RT lads interviewed him. Are you going to do it? We're going to do it. Like, you know, it was as you said earlier on, it was wartime stuff, really. Like, you know.
Yeah. Was Lohan, in a way, maybe that Clare team, actually, were they very, when you think back to the great Kilkenny side you were part of, were they a similar type of player? Were they rooted, do you feel, in the same characteristics? Like, it felt as though, as you say, it was get out in front of your man first and foremost and win that ball, and everything else would just follow.
Yeah, well, I'd say you only really have to look at the two managers that were over both teams. They both think along the same lines. You win your own ball, you win the physical battle. You can run, but at the end of the day, it's about winning your own ball and it's about hurling. And when Lochnan came in that time, like, I know he was fierce in the physical fitness, but it was more to develop their minds and to develop their mental strength more than anything. And, you know, Brian Cody was the very same. Like, he wanted to go out to win every single ball as if it was the last one. So I think both managers probably teed up teams the very same way, really.
So how come you never became a fullback then?
Well, I was a fullback underage.
JJ yeah, stepped fullback. In then, was it?
No, Hickey. JJ was on the wing, but... Yeah, you kind of have to be strong or fast for fullback. I think I was more suited to the wing.
Brian Loughan is on the line. He's with us now, the current Clare Hurley manager. Evening, Brian.
Good evening, Nathan. How are you doing, Tommy?
Yeah, how are you doing, Brian?
You're keeping well?
Good now, yeah. Good.
We might get on to some of the challenges that you're facing at the moment in a little while as an inter-county manager in the current crisis. That day then, 1995, I presume you don't remember the Come on a Munscale match that Tommy Walsh was playing in?
No, I didn't. I didn't have the pleasure of seeing it on that particular day. So, unfortunately, I didn't.
That day, were you the sort of player who could take things in as the match was happening and appreciate the surroundings and that Clare support that Tommy was talking about? Or did it all just go past in a flash?
Well, I suppose that day, for us, it was all new. Like, everything was new that particular day, you know. Us going up to Crow Park on an Ireland final day was new. And then, you know, down in the dressing room, we were in the old dressing rooms at the corner of the Hogan stand. That was new for us. Like, very different to what would be there today. But, you know, it was, you know, before the game, like, all the press used to come in and there was, then they would clear out maybe 40 minutes before the game. But it was... Anything we were dealing with for the first time, so it was all novel. But we kind of embraced it, I suppose, at the time.
Had you any way of preparing for that? Like, had Loughnane spoken to people who'd been there on that big day before to sort of get your heads in the sense that this isn't, as you say, completely new for everybody, that you could sort of mentally prepare yourself, or was it you just had a fly by the seat of your pants?
No, it was kind of, I think the preparation, I can remember Loughnane at the time, his big thing in all the training sessions beforehand was that Offaly would not be able to handle our style of hurling, whatever that meant. But that was the big thing that he had drummed into us. And another big thing that he was, particularly for the backs, was that forward line that Offaly had at the time, you know, with you know, all the duties and Pat O'Connor and then such a brilliant midfield there as well. They were a real dangerous forward line. So it was, at the time we had, it was our responsibility. Each man had responsibility for their own man. And as Tommy was saying there earlier, you took responsibility and the goal was to beat your own man. But even if the ball was breaking around you, you needed to find your own man. You couldn't let your man go free. So, you know, it was... We didn't concentrate that much on the occasion. It was all about the game. It really was all about the game, and you know, nerves wasn't a big issue or anything like that. It was the game we had a job to do.
Yeah, had you learned your lesson maybe from the league final? Because there's a quote from Loughnane, I think, before the league final, and obviously he suffered so much heartbreak as a player with Clare in terms of not winning a Munster title, where he said he'd swap everything for a Munster title, the whole lot, my whole hurling life, to win a Munster title before the league final, and you go and get beaten in that almost, there was so much emotion earlier in the year that by the time he got to an All-Ireland final, actually, that maybe he was a bit more clinical and not quite as emotional.
Yeah, I don't know. We went out to win that league final, but Kilkenny were better than us on the day. Like they had more quality, and you know, typical Kilkenny banged in a couple of goals at the right time for them and the wrong time for us. So it just didn't work out, and then we kind of faded. After those goals, Dennis Byrne got one of the goals, like put it into the top corner, and the other corner forward, Morrissey was his first. I can't think of his first name there at the moment.
Morrissey.
But he banged in the other one, and we there wasn't any real fight in us after those goals went in, and that went against us, and we were hard enough on ourselves after that, because you know we were better than that. But I suppose, you know, we had that was earlier on in the year, and we had improved a bit, and we had got better as, you know, Tom, you mentioned there earlier, you know, that we got hammered in 2 months to finals. Tip gave us a right hiding, and Limerick gave us an awful hiding as well in 94. And it was really coming to a stage where everything was on the line. You know, the Munster final, the first round of the Munster Championship against Cork, everything was on the line. We won it by a point, or, you know, Baker got a goal in the last minute or so. Then the Munster final, everything again was on the line for this team, because, you know, if you could be forgiven to be beaten maybe once or twice, but if you're consistently beaten like that and three times in a row, and I suppose, look, Nan had experienced it as a player, you know, everything was on the line in those matches, and everything was on the line for that team. So if that team was beaten in the Munster final, say the names that you're talking about, the Jamesy, Sparrow, Dalo, McMahon, Dial, you know, all those great names in Clare hurling, would say they would have been nothing. You know, it really, everything was on the line. So, you know, we kind of got used to it, and then as we progressed, then, you know, you can't beat winning for a bit of confidence, and you know, things fell into place, and when they did fall into place, we were able to avail of the opportunities that we got.
So by the sounds of it, then that Munster final was just the release valve that team needed. Like, it sounds as though there was, as a player, like the night before that Munster final, are you sleeping well? Are you very much aware of the pressure that's there and what's going to be said about the players if you don't go on and win?
Well, I suppose it depends on the individual. Like, we had some guys in the team that never slept a wink. Like Liam Doyle, he was play like he played, but he didn't sleep a wink.
Wow.
Not a wink. You know, and when he says I didn't get a wink of sleep, it meant that from 11:30 at night, when one person falls asleep, until 8:00 the following morning when they wake up, he didn't get a wink of sleep. You know, so.
And what's he doing? Really? Was he just pacing the floor in the room? Was he?
I don't know.
Desperately
don't know.
Trying to get to sleep.
He just never slept before games. Whereas you'd have some fellas and they'd have to be woken up. Like, I was kind of a guy that you'd have to wake me up. You know, my mother nearly have to come in and wake me up before a match, because, you know, I sleep well. And say Frank, my brother, who was on the team as well, he would have been something similar to that. So yeah, there was different personalities that were there. Like, and then you'd have, like, probably the coolest guy we had, or the Dalo was probably the coolest guy externally out on the field, you know, that you'd see. But he was a bit like Dial as well, you know. He used to need help sleeping as well, you know. That was just the differences in personalities.
Tommy, by the sounds of what we're hearing there, and I go back, I remember a conversation you had about All-Ireland final preparation, and Brian Cody's attitude was, like, no matter what happens the night before, the morning of, you forget about it the second you go out in the field. It's done. That even though you have players not sleeping the night before, actually somehow they were able to get into the mental state where it didn't affect their performance, that you could turn up on the day and play well. And, like, there's so many people working behind the scenes now with hurling teams and with all sporting teams, you'd wonder, does that get lost, that everything needs to be right, where actually you just need to turn up and cancel everything out and perform?
Yeah, well, I think you have to, as Brian said there, it's all about different personalities. Like, if lads are, say, turning up later, if they're only coming at one hurl and they're letting standards slip, that's different. But say if you break a good hurl the week of a game, or if you don't get sleep the night before, you have to have a manager or the leading say personalities in your dressing room or on that management team getting that message across that it does not matter. The only thing that matters is when you go across them white lines at 3:30 on Sunday. So what it does is, Nathan, it gives you a peace of mind that you're not worrying, looking at your watch at 2:00. Jesus, the doctor or the manager told me I should be getting 8 hours sleep. I'm only after getting an hour. Towards Liam Doyle, I'm surprised at Liam Doyle, because he always hurled brilliantly. Like, he was the kite man of the team, kind of the unsung hero, but he was always brilliant as a wing back and always did his job. And Sordello was the same, but I've often heard of lads getting sick, lads puking before matches and that, and to go out and hurl a stormer. So I think you're right, Nathan, that you can't, there's no one kind of rule fits everybody. You have to kind of let lads go and just kind of give them a peace of mind, give them confidence. I think confidence is the most important part you could give a player going out onto the field, and because everything he's after practicing for the last 20 or 30 years is not going to matter in one day or one night. And so I think it's important just give them confidence to go out really at that stage.
Were you a good sleeper the night before matches, Tommy?
I was most of the time. Like, I lived in town as well with a few lads, so they could be up playing FIFA or that, so I'd be shouting down at them, you turn off that and go to bed. So, listen, there was All-Irelands had great sleeps, there was All-Irelands had terrible sleeps, but I think Brian gave us the peace of mind that time that it didn't matter, so that didn't matter. But one thing I would like to say to Brian there, Nathan, is... you know, look, Nan said at the time that, say, in the semi-final, he was on Joe Cooney, who would have been, you know, one of the legends of the game, like, I think universally loved and respected. And he was marking him in the semi-final and kind of twinged a hamstring. And in the final itself, I think possibly tore a hamstring with a couple of minutes to go. Like, I'd love to know what was going through your head when that happened. Like, how are you going to get through this next couple of minutes in the biggest stage of all?
Yeah, well, I suppose that was, the semi-final, it was very late in the game when I gave it a twinge, and I went down to Dr. Conn down in Cork, and he looked at it,
Brian, I'll stop you there. There's just a bit of an issue with your phone line, so we might just take a pause for just a moment, and we'll dial you back up when we get that right, but just before we get into that. Funny, the second he said there, Tommy, going down to Dr. Conn, I'm thinking of Kieran Donaghy going to Sean Boylan's house. Like, it's an incredible thing, that GAA community, that, you know, people from rival counties will help each other out. Maybe as long as it's not to a negative effect of their own county, but by and large, people will get it behind and make sure that people and players can get out there on the biggest days of their lives.
They were, and we had a lad, one of our guys, Peter Welch, went up to Sean Boylan this year. Only Sean Boylan is hugely respected in the GAA world. And I think the GAA is funny, like, when you're playing each other, you don't like each other at all. You nearly hate each other in a sporting sense, like. But as soon as you're not playing each other, everyone is the best of friends, like, and you try and dig them out, or... As you said, as long as it's not going to affect your own county or your own club's chances. So I think it's a great thing. The GAA as a whole is more like a family than anything.
Brian, sorry about that. There was just an issue with your line. You were just talking about going down to Dr. Conn?
Oh, yeah. No, after the semi-final, I gave it a twinge in the semi-final. And, you know, later we found out that there was a bit of trouble with it. Like, you know, when we got it properly diagnosed afterwards, like, and there was just a weakness there in the hamstring. But Dr. Conn had said to me before the game, he said, look, the next time that you sprint, will be running out onto the field in Croke Park, and just plough through the game as much as you can. And then after about 10 or 15 minutes in the second half, at this stage I was on John Try went out under the Hogan stand, got a ball, and I felt the hamstring, that it was gone at that stage. And John Try took his shot, and I was on the ground actually watching it, and it went just about 1 inch to the right of the post and out wide. And it was a crucial ball, in that if John had put that over, it would have put them four points ahead. But as it was, there were only three, so we were still in the game. Like, well, we were still being in the game at four, but it just would have been that bit more difficult. But, you know, it was a great play by John. Got possession, you know, super touch into his hand, turned me and took his strike, but it just tailed a small bit and went wide at the right hand post. But I did the hamstring at that stage, and I knew I was going to be under pressure for the rest of the game. But look, I suppose I can remember at the time that Shawnee was flying it. You know, well, our total half-back line, you know, between Daly, Doyle and Shawnee, they were flying it. And in the two corners beside me, Holly and Frank were in great shape, you know, up against really good opponents. Like, Dignan was part of that off-lead team as well. Like, you know, Dignan, John Troy, Pat O'Connor, the two Dooleys, the three Dooleys were there as well. Like, so they were a real tough group to handle. But our lads were kind of getting out in front. Like, so it wasn't so much like the last 20 minutes that I played wasn't anything hectic now. But I thought our backs in general were going well. So I wasn't as exposed as I could have been.
John Giles was on earlier on. He was talking about that Leeds team he played with and that sort of bond of brothers. And again, without wanting to go back to too many war analogies, how he felt at the time, they were very much an army together in the trenches, and it was one in, all in. That Clare side, Brian, it felt as though it was a similar sort of group that, like, even now, 25 years on, there's a great bond amongst you, by and large, that, you know, you still come together, that it's a team that took to each other brilliantly, and it certainly feels from the outside as though you can come together and have a nice, good conversation about it and sort of acknowledge everything that you achieved.
Yeah, it was a great bunch. Like, we have always got together or tried to get together once a year, and, you know, we might go and play a game of golf, or, you know, we could be in Cork, or we could be in Galway, or, you know, everyone. It's generally the likes of Dalo and Frank and Barry Murphy that kind of organise it most of the time, and, you know, we all have email addresses, so an email goes out, and generally speaking, people try and make an effort to be there for. They'd come to the golf, or they'd come to the night out afterwards. But yeah, they, most people would make a good effort, and it's generally a highlight of the year. And, you know, as people are, you know, in different circumstances and settle down and all that kind of stuff, you don't be out at your buddies as much as as you would have been in the past. So it's generally a night to look forward to. Yeah.
Tommy, at that stage with Kilkenny, do you have your yearly reunions, aside from, I guess, pretty much every single one of you works in the media, so you're all in Croke Park and All-Ireland Final Day anyways?
Well, I'm just after deciding now, I'm not going to retire at 40 anymore, I'm going to extend it to 50, because when you're still hurling, you get about 15 sessions a year. Brian seems to be only getting one. No, we're not at that stage yet, but as we get older, possibly, we'd like to do, because we were like, I can hear Brian, you know, describing his bunch. We could nearly describe our bunch the very same. And the likes of David Hurty now would be a great man, so I must get on to him to try and organise it now for this year, because sounds like a great idea. And I think when you've went through, you know, when you're so long together with such a group of players, and then if you have a couple of nice memories to go along with it, sure, it's going to be a good night. Like, so, yeah. We might even go down and play the clear ways in a game of golf, maybe.
how did Taggy get on the dancing in the end?
Yeah, he got to the final, because the semi-final turned into the final.
Right.
And it was only decided that morning. So Lottie Ryan won it in the end, in fairness. She was brilliant. She was brilliant. So, they didn't say who came second, third or fourth, but we all know he came second. So.
Brian, just before we let you go, listen, obviously there's greater things happening in the world right now, but from an inter-county manager's point of view, with the league having gone quite well, it seemed, what can you do at the moment with players? There's obviously no training sessions. Do you just have them on individual programmes? And, like, are you thinking still about a start date of a Munster Championship, or are you almost having to get your head around the fact that maybe even that will be pushed back?
Well, I suppose we're just waiting to see what happens, and hopefully the measures that have been put in place, the public health measures that they will work, and that they will be seen to work over the next couple of weeks. So it was, you know, when we got the notification last Thursday, this day last week, that there was to be no collective training sessions, and we thought about maybe getting a kind of putting the lads into groups of maybe the 3 or 4 or 5 and putting them into small groups into gym. But that wasn't something that when we spoke about it, it wasn't something that we went with. So we effectively just communicated to the lads by WhatsApp and just told them to try and follow their individual programs. So it's really, we've been leaving it up to themselves to do those individual programs and to try and do to try and get a bit of hurling in, and you know, not to forget about the physical work and the speed work and all, you know, the endurance work that they've been so good at doing for the last couple of months. And you know, I suppose it is, you know, you're looking forward to a semi final of the league, and you're looking forward to whoever you're going to be getting in that. But you know, as we know, that you know, other events and other circumstances have overtaken that now, and you're just looking, hoping that it will be back. But if it isn't back, you're just conscious that there's a reason that it isn't back, and yeah, you're just hoping that people are safe and well.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. And hopefully it is back, and hopefully we're talking tactics again soon. Brian Lohan, thanks a lot for taking the call.
Okay, thanks a lot, Nathan. Thanks, Tommy.
Tommy, thanks you Brian. As well.
Thanks, lads.
Mind yourself. We'll talk to you again over the next couple of weeks, no doubt.
Lads, thanks.
All right, that is Tommy Welch and Brian Lohan. If you missed out on any of that, it'll be up on offtheball.com. We're going to take a very quick break.
The GAA Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.